If I had a hammer, the old folk song starts. We can't say for sure if anybody from Habitat for Humanity actually sings that song, but group members do have plenty of hammers, and always plenty to do, building houses for people who might be lifelong renters without Habitat support. Spring is approaching, bringing warmer weather and renewed activity for the Rogue Valley chapter of Habitat for Humanity. Let's talk about the general mission and what's coming up. We have two guests from the Rogue Valley Habitat for Humanity branch. Denise James is the executive director. Welcome, Denise.
Good morning. Thank you.
And Holly Hobart is here as well. She's the program manager.
Good morning. Thank you.
Good to have you both here. So, Denise, how long has Habitat been around nationally, and what is it generally set up to do?
Nationally, it's been around since 1976 or 1977, when it was founded in Americus, Georgia. And at that time, it was really set up to partner with families, provide them with affordable living, and eliminate substandard housing was really the main core of the mission. Today, our organization began in 1987. There are over 1,600 independent affiliates throughout the United States and 30 in Oregon.
So over the 25-plus years, I mean, how many homes have you built? How many families have you helped in the Rogue Valley?
Luckily, we have just completed our 54th home and ready to start number 55 soon.
And so who is eligible? How does the whole process work?
Well, there's three components to that. One is they have to be low income. It's their income level must be between 40 and 60% federal median. So that changes each year and is dependent on their family size. But they do have to have some kind of an income. They have to show that they can pay back the mortgage because they will pay it back. And they have to show a need for housing. It's not just a new home ownership program. It's a need. We actually go and visit their home. They need to, it would be overcrowding. It'd be substandard conditions they're living in, paying too much of their income in rent. All of those really qualify, or homelessness also qualify for that need. They have to be willing to partner with us. Partner really means that they're going to help build the home. They have to put in 500 hours of sweat equity. They have to complete an educational curriculum. They have to really be a face for us throughout the process.
What's the educational curriculum part of that?
Well, it's we have some different courses that teach you about insurance, about what homeowners insurance is, what the mortgage process is, how to take care of your home, how to be a good neighbor. That's important for people that aren't used to being a homeowner, is how to get along with that neighbor that you're going to be next to for the next 30 years at least.
Holly Hobart, you're relatively new to Habitat, I understand, but I'm curious to know if you've gone out and had a chance to look at some of the conditions in which people have lived before they actually get their Habitat home.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
What kinds of conditions do you find?
When I first started, I started in May of last year, and we were selecting families. So I went with my Family Services Committee to look at some of the houses that people were applying that they were living in. Some of the houses, they're small, definitely overcrowding issues. A lot of people who have a lot of stuff fitting in a small area, hoarders, that sort of thing. People who are living with their parents in a small guest house type of thing that's out in the back that they don't actually have, their own kitchen, that sort of thing. So they go into the parents' house to use those type of items. So
crammed into tight spaces and a lot of stuff and a lot of people around in general. How do most people find their way to Habitat for Humanity?
Word of mouth is huge for us. I'm in charge of family services, and I'm kind of gauging who is interested in our program, and it's primarily word of mouth. A lot of Habitat families will spread the word out there, and, you're just other people in the community. A lot of people know about us, and they know where we are, and it's word of mouth by far.
So they find you, certainly, but how much outreach do you have to do to let people know that you're out there and begin to try to pull in applicants?
Quite a bit. We do whatever we can. We have Facebook, social media, that sort of thing. We have a newsletter that goes out. I'm in the process of trying to get into local church newsletters for our selection for families in April. I go and do presentations. I just did one out at Head Start. So there's a lot of outreach to the community that we do.
Is there anything like an ad budget? I mean, would you even consider something like that if you had the money available?
We do a little bit. Mm-hmm. We do a little bit. We also have a lot of friends in the media, such as you. We do a lot of outreach wherever we can. We might spend a little, but it's really not where we want our money to go. So we try to just do a lot of agencies and churches and schools and media PSA kind of things.
And in 25 plus years and 55 houses thus far, I guess, is probably still a great many more people who would like to use the services of Habitat than have been able to.
Exactly.
We're talking about Habitat for Humanity and the Rogue Valley chapter in specific with Denise James, the executive director, and Holly Hobart, the program manager. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions, comments, maybe stories. Maybe you've worked for Habitat for Humanity in the past or gotten one of their homes. Join us at 800-838-3760 throughout the region, 800-838-3760, or send emails to jx@jeffnet.org. So, Holly, once somebody has made contact with Habitat and they're interested in moving into a Habitat house, tell me about the process from there, the process of applying and certifying and all the things that have to happen before a single piece of wood is picked up.
So the first step is to fill out, we have interested partner contact forms, and that's going to be their name, if there's a co-applicant, their address, mailing address, you know, and then a brief description of their needs in general. And then I'll briefly talk with them, you know, what our program is about, you know, the willingness to partner, the volunteer work involved, ability to pay, and the need factor as well. And then after I have their information, we take down their address and we store it in a database. And in April, I will be sending out invites, well, before probably beginning of April, end of March. And we'll be sending out invitations to an application orientation. The orientation sessions are the best way to get an application, but they are not the only way. And during our orientation, our Family Services Committee will go over the program as a whole, so they get an idea of, you know, what's involved. Because a lot of people, you know, they come in and they think, oh, it's a free house, but really it's not. They pay us back on a 30-year no-interest mortgage. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we really pride ourselves on being a hand-up organization and not a hand-out. And so that's a big part of it. But after the orientation session, then we collect the applications. We'll be accepting applications for about a month. We have 30 days to take in applications. And with our organization, we have decided to have an open application period instead of accepting applications all year round.
So, in other words, you just confine it to one short period of time?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's a lot of work for you, isn't it?
Yeah, but I like it, and it's a lot of fun. It's probably one of my favorite parts of the job is being able to bond with the families and just go with them through this process and, you know, and change their life. They wouldn't be where they wouldn't be moving into the house if it wasn't for our organization.
Well, there's certainly great stuff to be had by taking part in this, but I just wonder how daunting it is up front when you begin to list off the expectations of the families. If you get some big eyes, as you're talking about the 500 hours of sweat equity, for example.
Sometimes, but with our program, 500 hours does seem like it's a lot. But it's a process where they have, you know, anywhere between 12 to 14 months to complete the hours. And so when you break it down, it's really not that many hours a month. And with our homeowners and our program, they have to do themselves 250 hours. And then they can have family and friends complete the other section of hours. So it's not solely on the homeowners to complete the total 500. They can have family and friends help them with their hours as well.
Okay, so other people can pick up the time, but that just accounts for the person who's going to end up being the homeowner. So Denise James, who else does the work for Habitat? Who are the people who build the homes?
Well, one thing Holly didn't emphasize enough is the volunteerism. Right at the start, there is a committee that puts so many hours in reviewing applications and credit checks and all the documentation, as well as the home visits. That's the first start of that. And then once we get to the house construction, it's volunteers. We have a paid construction staff manager, and then otherwise it's volunteers. We, I think, utilize over 1,200 volunteers a year, and I don't even know the number of hours that are put in from volunteers. But that's who's doing the bulk of all the work that we do.
And these are pretty good-sized crews. I've been out there on some of the Habitat builds. And, in fact, the picture that we cribbed off of your website to put on our website showed one of the women's builds. And it looked like there was at least a dozen people out there on that crew, which is kind of big for a house-building crew.
It's easy a dozen. We have lots of groups that want to come from churches, from students, veteran groups, agencies. We try to limit it at 15 per group, and that sometimes that's difficult.
Really, just because that many people want to
be
involved.
Yeah, I mean, we're very blessed. It's very fortunate that so many people want to come and help. But, yeah, we do have to limit it at times.
Are there any issues with difficulty in do you have to go through some additional hoops to get permits to build the houses? And let's talk about the construction itself and general sizes you're shooting for. You're not building opulent homes, I'm assuming, here.
Exactly. We have very definite criteria on what we build, and it's very small, decent homes, very limited options are in each home. And we actually don't receive any special treatment from any of the cities regarding permits. We're paying for them. We're buying land just like everyone else. So we just go through a construction process like anyone else would.
Well, I believe when Habitat was formed, it was a sort of a Christian mission. I mean, is there any element of that in there now? Do you have to be a Christian to get one of the houses, that sort of thing?
You do not. Christianity is really the heart of the organization, but it's not limited or there's no boundaries by that. So we accept people from all faiths, no faiths, don't care about their faiths, but it is still that Christian mission, and a lot of people are drawn to us because of that.
Holly Hobart, I have to wonder if talking about the enthusiasm that people show when they're first interested in the program, if they didn't get in onto the list to get a house built this year, if they often come back year after year.
Yes, we do have applicants that do apply multiple years in a row. One of our home houses that we just are the 50th house, right? Yeah. So the 50th house, that homeowner had applied before, and so this time around she did get a house. So.
Each time that we go through the process, we select just enough families that we think we're going to build in the next year, or maybe 18 months. And it's really based on the greatest need. So there might be people that do qualify, but if we know that we're not going to build that many houses, we limit it by who has the greatest need. So just because you haven't been approved once doesn't mean that you really didn't qualify. It just means that your need wasn't as great as someone else's.
Talking to the folks in Rogue Valley Habitat for Humanity, Denise James, the executive director, and Holly Hobart, the program manager. You can join us at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org, or take a gander at our Facebook page and see Denise and Holly in the picture we shot just a few moments ago. Habitat for Heroes program, is it something relatively recent to Habitat for Humanity?
We started that program just a couple of years ago, and it was really a national movement through Habitat for Humanity. We were the first in the state to adopt the program, but it's really focused for the veteran community. We really target the community and look for a veteran that will qualify, and we just believe that that we have that obligation to help serve those that have served us.
And is it any veteran, but pretty much the same sort of financial circumstances for the veteran to get into the program?
It is, yes.
And there's also something I understand called the A Brush with Kindness program.
And that actually, Holly, that's really been her focus. So I'll let Holly.
Take it away, Holly.
Yeah. So the A Brush with Kindness program is our minor exterior home repair program. And so that's pretty much anything outside, so landscaping, porch and deck repair, repainting, those sort of smaller projects, not siding, nothing that goes inside the house. So it's not siding or windows, but definitely the landscaping, the painting, the porches that are rotting and falling apart will come and we will repair those items.
And what does the homeowner have to put in that program?
For that program, it is 10 hours of sweat equity per $1,000 that we spend. The most that we will give out on the micro loan for the A Brush with Kindness program is $3,000. So the most that they'll have to do is 30 hours of sweat equity.
Let's grab some headphones because we have a phone call for you. Let's go to Helga in Talent. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Denise James and Holly Hobart from Rogue Valley Habitat for Humanity.
I would like to hear more about the store where you sell used materials, and whether when people bring things, is it a tax-deductible donation, and so on.
All right, so this is the Habitat Restore. Thanks for the question, Helga. That's in South Medford, the Restore. Got a pretty good piano there. Go ahead.
Do I need to leave mine?
Sorry. Didn't matter. No.
Our Restore, we opened in 2003, actually, and we've had several transitions and changes throughout the years. We're now located on South Pacific Highway. And the Restore program really is to take used building materials and home improvement items. It's all through donations. People do get a tax deduction for that. And then we resell that to the public. All the funding from the store is used for administrative cost and for house construction.
So where are you getting the parts? Are people just donating them?
People donate it. Yeah.
Okay. So what is the window, Holly? You talked about a window for people applying for Habitat Homes coming up.
For our
time
house,
period, yes.
The time, sorry. So we will be accepting applicants. Our first orientation is going to be on April 21st, I believe, and it will be in the administrative office. And so after April 21st, we will be leading into a month period where we will be accepting applications and having applications ready at our office to hand out to individuals who come in who are interested in our program.
And you mentioned a 30-year mortgage interest free, is that right?
Yes, it's a 30-year no-interest mortgage.
What if somebody needs to leave? I mean, can somebody sell a Habitat house?
They can sell. We have a resale policy in place that we share the equity with them. And the equity actually, it's a very complicated formula, but there is a way for them to sell and also protects the asset that we have in place for them.
And is it just sold on the open market, or do you try to make sure that somebody else in a low-income situation moves into that house?
We have the right of first refusal, but they can put it on the market and sell. Within the first 5 years, if someone were to sell their home, they would receive no equity at all, nothing that they'd even put into it. After year six, we then share the equity with them. But the houses are all sold for cost of construction, so whatever it cost us throughout that, as well as we put a second on the note for the difference between cost of construction and value of the home. So we protect the entire value of the home.
Safe to say there are a lot of moving parts to Habitat for Humanity, a lot of things to keep track of. Right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. And so in a given year, I mean, how many houses can you expect to build, say, over the course of the, for a year from now?
Last year, we closed on 7 houses, mm-hmm. and which was a record number for us. It's typically 3 or 4. We have a goal this year to complete 5. One of our issues is that we have to fundraise for each house. Even though people pay it back to us, it takes 30 years for them to do so. So we're always trying to gather the funds to build, and we project we can probably do 5 for this year.
Okay, a couple seconds left. Do you have a fundraiser coming up?
We do. Tonight we're playing Bunko.
Oh.
About 100 people can come. It's a small event, but great, great PR, a lot of fun, raise a little bit of money. We've got another one coming up soon.
And where's the Bunko fundraiser?
Bunko at our administrative office, 2201 South Pacific Highway. Starts at 5:30.
Okay, great. Great to have you both here. Denise James is Executive Director, Holly Hobart, the Program Manager at Rogue Valley Habitat for Humanity. Thank you for joining us today at the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you.